This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.
Hi, welcome to Dare to Be Authentic. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell. It's great to be here with you today, and I have a special guest I'll be introducing in just a second. And I wanted to remind you about the newest project I'm working on. It's my newest Dare to Be Authentic book. This is going to be number 5 in the series, Hard to Believe, and it's going to be called Dare to Be Authentic, Let Yourself Prosper. This book is all about allowing yourself prosperity in your life, and not necessarily financial prosperity, but prosperity of all areas, whether it be health, whether it be relationship, whether it be finances. So if you have a story to tell about allowing prosperity, give me a call at 954-243-7297 or visit my website, lifecoachmari.com. That's lifecoachmari.com. And I'm going to go right ahead and introduce my guest for today. We have Les Patterson. He has a very interesting story. He wrote a book called The Underdog, in which he describes his experiences in dealing with the passing of his wife in August of 2017 after 17 years of battling cancer. Why I chose him to be on my show is because he is so authentic, and you'll see as he speaks from the heart, and he speaks the truth of what he experienced. Welcome to the show, Les. It's so great to have you today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great. So I just said you've written a book called The Underdog about your experiences, the wife who battled cancer over 17 years. Wow. Tell us what led you to write this book.
Well, I think it was more of a case of my own sanity more than anything else. Once you watch someone with a life-threatening illness for a long period of time, it really does start to wear on you a little bit, both physically and mentally. And I think I think it was more therapy than anything else when I first started writing. But then as I started writing, I was being told by many people that there are so many other people that are going through similar situations. And I had not really considered that when I first started writing it. It was more of a selfish, therapeutic realization for me, because I really had no one to talk to, another adult to talk to, about how I was feeling about her illness. And it's more about my perspective, more so than how she felt. So it was from my husband's perspective on how, you know, how I had to deal with the family and deal with her illness at the same time.
Right. I like that it's from your perspective, because I don't know how many books we have of this nature, and it's important, you know, as a caretaker, there is a lot of suffering going on. There's a lot of emotions that you experience, and I know that all of those are in the book. So tell us a little bit about how it felt to write the book. I know you said it was very therapeutic, and how you felt after it was finished and how long it took you.
Well, a lot of questions all at one time. Let me see if I can separate them. I actually started writing it in 2004. I actually started writing about it in 2012. The time, my wife had gone through about 4 different surgeries at that time, and she had survived all 4 and was doing fairly well. And when I first started writing it, it was more about a story of hope, about resilience and how you get through everything and how you fight through, and you know, you just persevere. And then I took a break from writing because she had gotten more ill, and I knew that it was, in my mind, it was an unfinished story because she had gotten ill again and she had 4 more surgeries after that. So she survived 8 different times. And when I looked at what I was writing and looked at how I started, it was more a tale of two stories. It was a story of hope at the beginning and then a story of despair at the end, knowing that there was a finite ending to the story at this point. So I had to, it took me a couple of months. I had to find a way to bridge the two together. And I think I did it. And once I found a way to bridge the two together, then it started to flow a lot easier. As far as being a caregiver during that, it was a 17 and a half year illness, through a 24 and a half year marriage. But I, as I told you, in the pre-show, I was a terrible caregiver. It was funny because my family kept saying, well, be careful how you say that because people won't like you. Well, you know, I'm sorry. But the person I liked most in my life, you know, I was, you know, I was doing a terrible job with. I had no experience being a caregiver. I'm just a regular guy. You know, I worked every day, you know, a couple of kids and, you know, trying to, as I told you earlier, you know, I had trouble just separating pills on a day-to-day basis. Whoever invented that pill separator with the daily pill thing in it, he deserves a medal because without that, I don't know how that would have happened. But
wow.
I had trouble with it. You know, I changed an ostomy bag. I learned how to do that. Hated it. Just hated it. And as a caregiver, you know, I have a real newfound respect for nurses and people who do this for a living because there is no chance I could ever live day to day doing that.
Right. Although you did it for 17 years.
Well, you know, you become a robot after a while. It becomes, you know, routine. But with every surgery, there was something else I had to do. There was something else I had to do. You know, I had to help her to the bathroom. I had to, you know, help her to the car. Right, she had an ostomy. I had to help change the ostomy bag. Different medications. I had to realize when one medication ended, a new medication was taking its place, and I had to kind of recognize that, and I had to know when she had to take it. So it became a full-time job in of itself.
Right, I can imagine. And, you know, like I said, I love the honesty with what you're sharing because I'm sure that caregivers, you know, around the world suffer and feel the same way you do. But not many people are willing to share it, you know. There's frustration, there's anger, there's despair, there's all these feelings. There's, like you say, how do I deal with these pills? I feel stupid. I don't know what I'm doing. And I think it's wonderful that you've come out to write this and to talk about it and to say, it's okay to feel this way, right? It's okay to feel these feelings. It's okay to hate it, to hate something that you're doing. But you still did it. You were loyal and dedicated to her. You loved her. You took care of her. I think that's absolutely fantastic. So tell me a little bit, Les, about what role you think authenticity played as you were sharing your experiences in this book.
I think you just hit on it earlier. You know, I had to find a real feeling about this. I had to really kind of be honest with myself a little bit more than what I had in the past. I had to come to terms with the fact that, you know, even though I hated doing this and I hated, she was my wife and I cared for her deeply, of course, but then, you know, on a day-to-day basis, your feelings change. You know, today I hate her because I have to change the ostomy bag. You know, why do you have to have an ostomy bag? You know, and then the next day I'm thinking, wow, I feel guilty about telling her that I hated her because she can't help it. You know, so
right.
So then I think, well, you know, why does she have to be so rude to me? Why does she have to be so so mean sometimes? And then I learned, you know, from research and talking to, you know, other caregivers and other people going through the same thing, that the medication does that. The medication changes that personality. It changes the way that they react to you on just a simple basis because, you know, I often said, you know, hey, she's not the person I married. But I think everyone can say that 20 years later, but in a more auspicious way. You know, she was totally different in the way that she would speak to me, the manner, the tone of her voice, the way that she looked at me. It was just like a totally different person.
Well, that'd be hard to deal with, and when people, you know, when people are suffering in any way, my dad suffered for many years from emphysema. In fact, when he was initially diagnosed, they only gave him, like, I don't know, 15 years to live, and he was like 50-something. I was just a teenager. And so he changed as well. And that wasn't any near as devastating as what your wife went through, but he changed. He wasn't as happy and kind and considerate as he used to be. He was cranky. He became that cranky old man, you know, because he was suffering. And so, you know, this happened to people. Yeah.
When this was happening, you know, when she was changing, her personality was changing on a constant basis. It was a matter, you know, people often ask me, you know, why did you stay? Why did you stay? And believe me, there are times when you read the book, there are a couple of times that I didn't really want to stay. But you don't really need to change yourself You don't change your personality just so you can be more compatible to her. You just learn to adapt to what she's morphing into, because you can't really change yourself. You really don't want to change yourself. You just need to be a little bit more open to what's going on around you.
I like that. And that's total authenticity, not having to change yourself. Because once you change yourself, you're not you anymore. And so there goes your authenticity. So I love that you said that. That's such a key point. I never heard anybody say that when it comes to caregiving. You don't have to change yourself. You just adapt. I love that method. Brilliant. Absolutely gorgeous. Thank you so much. So what is the main purpose now, you know, everything morphed, you know, you started writing the book for your own purpose, and there's nothing wrong with that. We all write books for our own purpose. I'm an author as well, and I'm sure you got a lot of healing out of it, but it began to change into something way bigger. So now what is your main purpose for people reading your book?
If you would have asked me a month ago, I would have said I had no idea. I wanted to have closure. First of all, I just wanted to have closure. That's quite frankly, I got tired of writing the book. I needed to find closure, and I needed to find a way to make it real and to make it, you know, comprehensible and make it make sense. But as I got toward the end of the book, I started to understand that other people were going through the same thing, and not just caregivers. I know we talk a lot about, you know, taking care of someone and having to deal with that person's illness, but it's the people that are ill. They need to realize that the people that are caring for them are trying to do the best that they can. And understand that I know it's hard for you to see as an ill person, it's hard for you to see what you're changing into. But if you can just step back, you know, just a little bit and see that, hey, these people around me really love me and they really want the best for me and they really want me to get well, I really shouldn't make this as hard on them as what I am. So the end game of this book is to kind of help people realize that it's not just the caregivers that are involved with this, but it's the people that are ill that have to realize that the people that are caring for them are doing it in their best interest. No one chooses to do this. The people that are ill, they don't choose to be ill, and the people that are caring for them really don't look at their wife at the altar and say, "Gosh, for better or for worse, for in sickness and health." And I really, really, really hope it's all the wealthy, healthy stuff. Sure we do.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know. And you do it, but you know what? Knowing that the consequences can be the other way, you still do it. So what I hope to gain from this book is clarity for myself and maybe a little bit of education and clarity for someone else.
That's great. So the book is not just for caregivers. Like you say, we talk a lot about them, but it's also to give those who are ill an insight to what their loved ones are going through. I love that. That's great. Very nice. Very good. So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say my sister is a breast cancer survivor. And so is my mother. And I'd never been around any kind of illnesses like this. But when my sister read the book, she saw it right away. And that's pretty much when I started to realize, hey, it's not just for the caregiver, it's for the people that are ill as well. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. No, that's a wonderful point. And wow. So you have cancer survivors all around you, and they've read the book as well. Excellent. So what is your main purpose then? I'm sorry, I already asked you that. What would you say to someone who's dealing with a spouse or a loved one suffering from cancer or other life-threatening illnesses? With everything that you've learned, what is the one thing you'd like to say to them?
Wow. Don't listen to anyone else. That's the one. Everyone's got an opinion. Everyone wants to tell you that you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. And even the people that are telling you you're doing the right thing, you're doing a great job, even though it sounds great for your ego, don't even listen to it, because tomorrow it's going to change all over again. It's got to be what you think you're doing is the right thing. It's got to be what you feel comfortable with. There's no one on this planet that knows a better way of taking care of each other than you and your spouse. No one else knows you better than you two. So if you're doing the job that you need to do, you're going to get affirmation and confirmation from your spouse. And you're going to get it probably in the most strange ways, but you're still going to get it. And the best way the best way that I knew that I was getting that was from my wife's in-home nurse. When she came to visit, she was like, wow, you did a great job doing this and you did a great job doing that. And I made the mistake of starting to listen to that. And I started getting full of myself, thinking, wow, I'm pretty good at this. Well, until she got sick, you know, all over again, I had to have another surgery. And I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? So you always have that guilt factor playing in there as well. So don't listen to everyone around you. You feel comfortable within your own skin, knowing yourself that you're doing the right thing.
That's such a wisdom. And you couldn't be any more authentic saying that, because that's what authenticity is. It's being who you are and not allowing people to drag you from that. So that's absolutely perfect. We're going to take a quick break. And if you want to call in and ask us any questions, you can call in at 929-477-3869. That's 929-477-3869. And you can start calling now while we go on break.
Perhaps there's a book within you just waiting to get out. Or maybe you dream of standing on a stage in front of hundreds of people, sharing a heartfelt message. I can help you embrace your voice and share it from a place of truth and clarity and love and totally, unapologetically, uniquely yours. Come visit me at carrieseverson.com and take a glance at my storytelling masterminds and customized story packages.
Hello. Do you have more months than money at the end of the month? Do you want to have more control of your finances so you can get out of bad debt and build wealth? My name is Karen Ford, and I help people demolish debt, budget, invest, and build wealth. My book, Money Matters, is found on Amazon or on my website, KarenFord.org.
Do you feel stuck or trapped with no opportunity for change? Do you feel there is more to life but have no idea how to embrace it? Visit AuthenticWildness.com. Too much routine deadens our authentic wildness and deprives us of joy. It's time to answer the call of your wild soul. As an inner wildness guide, I can help. Visit me at AuthenticWildness.com now.
An American Story, My Family and Yours, is a book written by Dr. Mimi Smith that supports the idea that spirituality is the foundation to freeing mankind of human beliefs. You will find this book on booklocker.com and amazon.com. An American Story, My Family and Yours.
Welcome back to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, and we have a special guest, Les Patterson, author of The Underdog. He wrote a book about how he dealt with the terminal illness and passing of his wife. So, Les, we talk about the book. Tell us how we can get a hold of it. Where can we go to get a hold of your book?
And by the end of the week, you'll be able to order it in print.
Awesome. Would you repeat that? We lost sound for just a second.
You can get it on Kindle Publishing, or you can go to kdp.com, which is Amazon, and you can download it. I think it's $9.99 on Kindle. You should be able to get it in print and hard copy print by the end of this week on Amazon as well.
Fantastic. And if you can't find it, just come over to my website, lifecoachmari.com, lifecoachmari.com. Click on the radio show page, and you will see Les there. He's there already, and you can click right into the link to buy the book. Fantastic. So is there something else that you'd like to say to a listener, just in general, something that's kind of on your heart now that you're on radio and you're able to have the floor and say whatever you like?
You know, that's always a dangerous thing to do. Friends and family that are listening, cover your ears. I spent a long time trying to put this thing together. It's not a very long book. There's not a lot of fluff. It's pretty much the raw me. For those of you that knew Leanne, my wife, and knew the struggles that she went through, and understood everything that we had lived with, you'll feel very close to it. So there are things I know a lot of you think that you know a lot of what happened. None of you out there that have not read the book know everything. There are some dream sequences in there, some nightmarish things, literally that I was going through that I had not put on paper until now. So it kind of brought some of the thought process together. So hopefully, for those of you that are caring for loved ones that are ill, and for those of you that are ill, bless your heart. I hope you find peace and serenity and everything you're going through, and I hope your family gives you comfort.
Oh, that's beautiful sentiment. Thanks so much, Les. So of all the things that you did wrong, of all the things that you did wrong and all the things that you did right, because we do, and not that you did them wrong on purpose, but, we do things because we're doing the best we can, right? We don't know a lot of times how to do things. We learn new things. But of all the things that you did wrong and you did right, what is the thing that sticks with you the most?
That's hard. Because you're talking about 17 and a half years, man. I expressed in the book a couple of times that I wanted to leave, and I did leave. And one particular time that I thought I wanted to have an affair. And none of those things really ever came to fruition. So I think the one thing that I had to keep in perspective, and the one thing that I was most, I guess, happy about, was that I didn't follow through with those urges, and I didn't follow through with those ideas of just walking out and leaving everything behind type of thing, because there was much more at stake than just one ill spouse. I mean, we had children, so we had to kind of take that into perspective as well. And the one thing I always knew and I always understood was that leaving would be easy. Staying is hard. And if you're a caregiver, please understand, we know, day to day, there are some days that are better than others. Just like for those of you that are ill, there are some days that are better than others. But at the same time, you still have a relationship and you still have to live through it day to day. It's the same as if you were not ill or if you didn't have to be a caregiver, you still would have to put up with each other on a day to day basis. Regardless if you're wearing the plaid skirt with the striped pants or the blush pink dress with with the yellow shoes, it just doesn't happen that perfectly every day.
Right, that's good. I like that, and I love your honesty and your authenticity in saying that how you felt. There were times that you just were done with it. You wanted to leave. We all feel that way when we're going through really hard situations in our lives. And sometimes we do leave, and then there's repercussions. You haven't talked at all about the kids. Would you like to talk about them a little bit? Do you bring them at all into the book and how what they were feeling or how you dealt with them?
not as much. I do mention them in the book. I try to keep them out of the book as much as possible because it's more of my perspective on how I dealt with her illness. But I can tell you, I've got three grown children. My youngest is a senior in high school, and he's got a little bit of cerebral palsy, and he's got Asperger's, autism. I guess some of that anger or some of that anxiousness in helping another person, with an illness, is extended a little bit because I had to take care of him a little bit as well. He's
right.
Very high functional. He's very highly functional, and he does everything. He's very independent. He can do things on his own. But it wasn't so much that way when he was younger. because he had to kind of grow into his comfortability of having cerebral palsy. So for those of you who know the illness, there are specific stages of that illness as well, and he's on the high end of functionality. So I didn't really have to take as much time as he got older, and having to care for him and take time away from my mm-hmm. wife when she needed it most. But the kids were a great help. My mother-in-law was a great help. Family as a whole, my sister was a great help. So there, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a great support system around me. And at the same time, I still felt alone. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's that feeling of, you know, trying to muddle through. And you always want to try to make yourself, you know, sound like you're the guy bringing water from the river 8 miles uphill, mm-hmm. you know. It's not always that way. Mm-hmm. But it is in a sense in your own mind when you're having to suffer mentally through, you know, what's going on. You don't really see the support that's around you until it's physically given to you. And even then, it's hard to see it. So, It was very difficult for me to acknowledge my kids helping out because I really didn't want them to help. I really didn't want them to be involved with the situation that had, you know, a terminally ill parent and another parent that was trying to take care of a terminally ill parent. You know, they had friends in school that had single parents from divorces or they had widowed or widowered parents of friends that maybe lost someone during a war, you know, through Iran, mm-hmm. Iraq, Afghanistan. And they were going through, you know, similar situations that way. But I didn't want them to feel like they weren't part of a whole family, that they were, you know, they had to suffer through this thing just like I had to suffer in helping their mother, you know, get better. I didn't want them to do that. So we shielded them okay. from a lot of that.
Wow. That's really wonderful. I think that because you were taking care of your wife, you had to take care of your kids that are young. But taking the time to shield them, I never really heard somebody talk about that. I think that's wonderful. And I'm sure the kids appreciated that, you know, that they could have as normal a life as possible, right? I guess that's what you were trying to achieve.
Well, I should probably tell you, too, that that was her idea. That really wasn't my idea. When she first got ill mm-hmm. and the kids were old enough to know what was going on, I wanted to tell them so they could be prepared mm-hmm. for what inevitability were to happen. She did not want to share it with them. I know during the course of her illness, she made two audio tape recordings. And those were only mm-hmm. to be played after she passed to give the kids a sense of who she was because they were so little. As time right. went on and she survived over and over and over again, I asked to see those tapes or where those tapes were. She destroyed them. She would not let anyone see them. And then it wasn't until the second to last illness that she actually told them everything that was happening.
Okay.
They were already teenagers at that point.
By then. Wow, that's some story. Well, Les, thank you so much for being on the show. The Underdog is the name of his book, Les Patterson, PATTERSON. You can find it on Amazon. Or you can go to my website, lifecoachmari.com, lifecoachmari.com, and get your copy. And it's been just a pleasure to have you today, Les. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Fun. I appreciate you having me.
Okay. And join us next time on Dare to Be Authentic Radio. You know where I am, and you'll see my posts so you can catch the next show. Thank you so much for being with us today.
This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.